29th. What is your full name?
James W. Blosser, Jr.
What's the W for?
Willard.
Willard?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like that name. Who is your mother and dad?
They live over at Elkins. Kathleen and Willard, Sr.
Did they always live there?
No, we used to live at Kearns. I was born and raised at Kearns.
What did your dad do?
Worked at the railroad. Elkins there. Retired.
Well, I bet he's got some stories.
Yeah, quite a few of them. Different ones.
Did you ever work on the railroad in it?
No. Never did.
What have you mostly done?
I worked for AMP. Uh-huh. Drove truck, tractor, and trailer. And manage a grocery store right now.
Oh, you're the manager over here?
No, of another store up here at Thomas.
What do you remember about November 4th?
Kind of rainy day.
Yeah.
Pretty rainy.
Been raining a long time, hasn't it?
Good while they had. And earlier that afternoon, we'd went up Pheasant. And we just kind of made it out of there, getting back out of there that evening. And when we come back down, they said they needed help up at Henry's. So we went to Henry's to try to help out that evening. To see what was going on up there with them. Got up to Henry's and water was really getting high. And there was some houses there that we wasn't sure whether there was anybody in them or not. So we started to check out a few of them to make sure. And we got up to Hebb's house, and him and her was in there. And me and Hank Thompson. And after we got there, there's four others come too. And once we got there, we couldn't get back out. Water just rose so fast that there was no way possible that you could get back out. And we just had to spend our time right there. And that's what we did, and prayed to the good Lord that he'd see us through the night. And the man did.
What do you mean the water rose so fast? It's a little hard to imagine that.
Well, we waded through the water. It was almost, I had on a pair of hip boots, like, and it was almost over the top of them when we was wading up to it. And the water just come up so much faster after that there was no, and so swift, that there was no way possible that anybody could walk in it or try to get out of it, you know. And it was just too fast, too swift. And it kept a raising, and you know, it was really raising fast. We even tried to get a rope and tried to have it, got a rope and tried to throw it across, but about the time the rope got across, here come a rooftop or a building top or something, and it caught the rope and took everything with it. If there had been somebody on it, it would have killed them, really. But the water just come up so much faster. Never seen it raise that fast, the way it was. It was Hank, Danny Booth, Danny Hibb, Danny's boy, Daniel, and his son-in-law, can't think of his name now. I know it, but I can't think of it. Yeah, Lipscomb. Can't think of his name. And Mr. and Mrs. Hebben. We spent the night there in their house.
What was that like?
Kind of frightening night. Never had anything like that to happen to me before. And I hope nothing like that ever happens again. It'll be something that I'll never forget. And maybe if I ever get in water again, the situation might come back to a person and make him stop and think, really, you know, about the night that he did get caught in the water. if he was ever in a water again situation. It's hard to say, because it's just something that's, if nobody was there, if he wasn't in any water or any place or anything, for any, you know, anybody and stuff, it's kind of hard to tell somebody what kind of a night you spent or anything, unless you know the situation, you know, and different things. But anybody that was in the water, I can feel for them, know what the feeling was for them. Though we wasn't in the water, we was in a house, but we wasn't sure about the house, how long it would be there. Because all we could do is just kind of watch the water come up the stair steps to see what was, we just kept watching it come up the steps. And wasn't sure, you know, whether it was going to come on up the rest of the way. And when it washed part of the house away, it really gave us a feeling. Because right underneath where we was at to start with, it wasn't too much left of it under there. When the water took it away, something hit it. We're not sure what, but something did hit it and knocked about all third of it away, of the house underneath it was probably somewhere in that neighborhood. And then we all went back to a back bedroom, kind of huddled together and prayed together. One boy, he really, I know in my opinion, he kind of really, I'm glad he was there with us. He really made a difference for us. And he's a good boy. He goes to church. And he was able to pray for us. We asked him to pray for us. When we was all standing together, huddled together, holding hands, because we didn't think there would be very much time left. Because you could feel the house rocking or more or less shaking. And you could hear the stuff hitting it. And you didn't know what time the good Lord was calling, whether it was going to be now or later or when, but we figured just any time. And we more or less just got together and held hands and prayed, trying to give ourselves a little boost to see if it wouldn't help us to where he would save us, take care of us that night, and the good Lord did.
You know, like I said today, you know, I'm glad Danny Hibb was there, because I know Danny Hibb was a good boy. But, you know, I'd backslid from church and things like that into how I was raised. But the first thing that really impressed me at night is, as scared as everybody was, you know, Danny Hibb asked me, he said, are you saved? And I said, I was, but, you know, I backslid. And he said, you want to pray? And at that time, I knew that, you know, death was knocking. And I figured, well, you know, if I'm going to die, maybe we can make things right with the good Lord. And Danny and I went to a room by ourselves and prayed. And after that, it was just such a calm feeling just sort of come over me. And I remember walking into a room where Jim was knelt down looking out the window. And Jim looked at me right in the eyes, and he said, "Dear God," he said, "be with us here tonight." And that's when we really all got together and started asking the good Lord to take care of us. And I honestly feel, if it hadn't been for Danny Hibb that night, that you know, there's a possibility we all would have died. You know, because the boy made us see the light. You know, and these fellows here, you know, being as young as they are, and junior firemen, they done a lot that night that impressed me. I mean, as far as being 16, 17 years old, to risk their self when they know that they got a bright life ahead of us to help us. And I don't think I've told either one of them, but I'll tell them right now, and I appreciate them. And I know I see Jim out here on the street, and I see still going to church. You know? Yeah.
Still going.
Still going, both of us are. And I don't ever intend to slide back away like I did at one time. Because I just can't put into words the feeling that I had that night in that house. When did it look like all hope was lost to you?
What did it look like?
When did it look like all hope was lost?
I can't remember about what time it would have been, but it was earlier that evening after we went up the steps. And when the water kept coming, and when you could see different things go floating by out there, just about anything you wanted to see, you could see going floating by. And when it was moving, it was really had the power behind it, you know. And then after we got, after part of the house washed away, really I didn't think there was much hope for us. It was just one of those situations, you know, when it takes part of it downstairs and there's nowhere to go. We had, after we'd prayed together, we'd more or less all was standing there, and we had decided then that we could just look for the house to break up about any time. And everybody decided that if something does happen, everybody just try to save themselves, because there's no way that you would be able to try to save somebody else with the waters the way they were. And we did all agree that, hey, when something does go, you just try to save yourself, because there's no other way that you could try to save somebody else.
Are you a good swimmer?
No, not really. I can swim, but, you know, I don't classify myself a real good swimmer. A real good swimmer, I wouldn't lay any bets on them in that kind of water. You'd have just as good a chance not swimming or as anything else, because you couldn't fight the current. And there was a lot of current. The road in front of the house looked like a river. And the river was back over 1,000 yards or better. That's where the river was at.
Where we was at, we was right probably less than a quarter mile below where the Dry Fork and the Blackwater Rivers come together. And we was right in the middle of both of them. And, you know, like I said today, I can't put into words how I felt that night. But, you know, as far as being with people that I was with that night, I couldn't ask anybody. I couldn't ask to be with any better people I was that night. I mean, we all realized what was going to happen. And I can distinctly remember the water. I didn't get concerned until the water started coming into the house. You know, when we was downstairs, and Jim and I both was trying to get the phone to work. It would work, and then it would go out, and then it would work, and then it would go out. But I finally got through to my wife, and I told her, I said, listen, you know, you're going to have to go upstairs and tell them we're up here, get us some help, or we're going to die. You know, and I know it was at 12:30 that night that when we realized that we was trapped, there's no possible way getting out, no possible way anybody getting into us, that I asked Danny Boots, I said, Danny, I said, what are we going to do? And Danny just more or less looked at me, and he said, well, he said, we're not going to make it. He said, we're going to die. And that's the most distinct thing I can remember, because I looked at my watch. I can remember looking at my watch. And then, you know, when the backside of the house went, and there was nothing underneath us, you know, except the floor between the two rooms where we was, upstairs and downstairs. And, you know, I know, of course, you know, I knew Jim probably better than any of the rest of them was up there, but before the night was over, I believe we knew everybody's life history. It was in the house. And
I think so.
It was remarkable to how we all stuck together, to how we all accepted the fact that we was going to die. There was nobody fought to why he was going to die or anything like that. It was just like everybody knew that he was going to die, and he had accepted the fact that he was going to die, and there was just nothing we could do about it. You know, but we sat there, and as the night progressed, which was the slowest night that I have ever spent or lived through, we laid down on the floor, and we decided, well, we'll try to get some sleep. But about the time you would, you know, get your eyes closed, you could feel the house shift, you could hear a big tree slamming into the house, just creaking, cracking, glass breaking. And I think at one time, probably about 4 o'clock in the morning, I dozed off to sleep, and I woke up and I thought, wow, I've been asleep for about 3 or 4 hours, and I looked at the clock and I've been asleep about 10 minutes. You know, but I I couldn't sleep. But the next morning, when we did go out, I think a lot of us, even now, you know, I go home and I lay down in the bed and I just get this feeling, you know, or the river around me, I'm terrified of water. You know. But it's just something we're going to have to hold our heads up and just keep right on moving.
Did you, as a result of praying, did you feel this sense of calm come over you, such as Hank described?
Yes, it did. It was just me and Danny had prayed together. And he'd asked me if I'd been saved, and I told him I hadn't been going to church and stuff, and I asked him to pray with me, and we did. And everybody more or less just had the calm feeling all night long, because it was just something you didn't know what to expect or what was going to happen anytime. It's just something nobody was sure of.
The feeling I had after the first time that Danny, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that I can just go up to someone and say, let's pray or anything like that. Well, I am now. I feel that I am now. But I just don't, the feeling that I had after the first time that Danny and I prayed, it was just like I was cold, we was all wet. I just had a warm sensation come over my body. I could feel myself calming down. I mean, I could actually feel myself calming down, and I could actually think to myself now, you know, we got to do here what we got to do. You know, we're just gonna have to try. But if this house goes, there's nothing we can do about it, and it's going to happen, you know. But, I had a feeling. I think we all did in that house that night. And the two guys across the street from us, there was some praying going on in that house, too.
Mm-hmm. We kept trying to holler at them to see how they was getting along over there, two junior farming, but with the water, with the noise from the water and stuff, it was kind of hard at times to hear. And we did have flashlights, had a couple of flashlights that we could use to shine back and forth across over at them, and to the people up on the road up there that was trying to get to us, but there was no way possible for anybody to get into us. It was just no way.
We got the last time I talked to the dispatcher, she informed us that help was on the way. And of course, our anxiety was built up so much to get out of there that anything that we heard outside or a motor running, we was convinced that they was there to get us out. You know, we're going to be all right. And during the night, there was a couple times that I was really let down. I know at one time, someone even said, I hear a helicopter. You remember that, Jim?
I think so.
And, you know, I was so excited, I went to the window and there was nothing. And it's just more like someone hitting you right between the eyes, you know. Oh, there ain't nothing out here. We heard shots, which we found out later was these two fellas here signaling to us. But we thought they was outside to get us, you know. And it was such a disappointment to when we went to the window when we heard the shots, and all we seen was these guys, you know, and they're in the same position that we're in, and there's no one there to help us.
What about when that inloader got buried?
When it first came in, you know, we was all excited, hey, they're coming to get us out of here, we're going to make it. Then the next thing I know, they got it hung up in a big hole and they couldn't get into us, and it's just like, wow, you know, it's just, bam, it just numbs you, you know, to where you just can't describe the letdown that you have.
One by one, you see the possibilities fading away.
Yeah, yeah, and there's nothing we can do about it.
It really gave us some relief, though, when we did hear that motor running on that big loader.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of perks you up. Makes you feel a little bit better that you know somebody's trying to, you know, do something for you anyhow. And one bad thing about it, a lot of people didn't know where we was at. If something would have happened that night, they wouldn't have had no idea who was in that house. Because it wasn't told who was in the house.
The information that
it didn't get out.
The rescue parties was that, I think they knew you two was over there, but they had no idea that Jim and I and six other guys was in the house right directly across the street from them. Because I remember the next morning when they finally did get us out, people said, was you over there too?
They thought these two guys were in your house.
Yeah, they had no idea that it was separate parties in separate houses. They had no idea that
I thought it was one house.
In the one house. If something would happen to us, we'd have just been listed as MIA, you know.
Missing.
No one knew where we was. And, I couldn't believe that either, because I talked to the dispatcher on a couple different occasions and I told her where we was at. And with the communications problem, they didn't know we was there. They had no idea we was there. My wife knew where I was.
It's just, there had been a lot of people, you know, just like the other boys, nobody had any idea where they was at. The other four either. And
tell me your name again.
It's Brian King.
Brian King.
Yeah.
What happened to you that afternoon?
Well, he's up in school and there, you know, it's raining hard up on the mountain. And then when he's coming home on the bus, you know, it was just raining hard like it was. You know, it's been raining every day. Well, nothing different. And then I heard the fire whistle go off and I went over to James Vance's house. He's another junior fireman. And he was already down there. And his mom said it was just, you know, they was taking out the files in Dr. Pete's basement and all, and taking it upstairs so it wouldn't get all wet. Then I heard it go off again, and I was walking out to another friend's house, and I seen Roger Murphy. I seen him getting his truck, and I asked him if he was going downtown. And he said, yeah, and I asked him if he'd give me a ride to the fire hall. And I went down the fire hall, I guess it's about, what, seven?
Yeah, around six.
And I seen, you know, Mike was down there, and Chief was down there, and he said, he's in the flood stage now. We got on our bunker gear and all, and we got back in Jim Props' truck, and he took us out to Hendrix. And then we went from there, and we was, you know, just getting people out of the houses. It wasn't really that deep then. You know, and then I think it was, who was it, Props? Said that there was some people trapped down
anyhow,
there.
Anyhow, when I first got to Hendrix, me and a couple other firemen got in a boat, and we was going to try to go over and get them. Anyhow, we started out in a boat and had those little high rim boats with the 10 horsepower motor. This wouldn't hardly get it in that water. And we got down there and knocked a hole in the bottom of the boat, and got the motor tangled up and wire and everything else. We dragged the boat back up out of there, and we all got in it again. Was going to try it again, and the thing sank right there. So I don't know who the order came from or anything, but all I know is that me and Brian were told to get down there and tell Hank and Jim, or they didn't even know Hank and Jim were down there, but they told us to get down there and tell whoever was in that house that we was going to try to get a boat into them. So me and Brian took a rope, and we just holding on to each other, basically, and we went down through there, and we got over there, and we heard all these guys hollering. They told us to try to get a rope across to them, so we was across the street from, which it really wasn't bad on the street. I'd say it was about, it wasn't really bad at the time, but it was about 6 feet deep in the middle of the road right now at the time. And we tied the rope onto one of the posts on the front porch of the house, and I started across it, the thing. I had hip waders on, which weren't doing much good because the water was up to about right there, everywhere. And I started across it with the rope and got sucked into the water and pulled myself back up, and Brian was helping me pull. And I think it was Hank that was over there, and he had a rope. And they tried to throw it across, and as soon as it hit the water, it was gone. We didn't have a chance to catch it. So we pulled our rope, me and Brian pulled our rope back up, and I threw it across to Hank. Hank got it and tied it onto something over there, or was just holding on to it or something. And about that time, a rooftop came down the middle of the street and took the rope, jerked the post off the porch, took whatever they had tied to, took everything, clear down this river.
Just went on down.
So, and Hank and then told us to go in that house and see if the phone still works. So I took a board and broke through the front door and went in and see if the phone worked, and it was dead. So we went back out on the porch, and they told us to go back and try to tell them to bring a chopper in. But they couldn't have brought a chopper in because the weather was too bad. But we started back across, and the water came in all this big onrush. I mean, we were standing on the front porch when we got there. It was about up to our knees. When we went out after trying to look at the phone, it was about up to right to our chest on the front porch of that house. So we started trying to get back, and there was no way we could. So we went in the house and we went upstairs. That's basically where we spent the night.
Yeah, we went in the house. It's only about 2 feet deep of water in the front floor.
By the time we got back outside, yeah, it was clear up, just so almost over your head right in the house. That's how fast it rose.
It just took out all the windows and just threw everything around the house.
It ripped the front porch off of that house and ripped the whole back wall on the lower story off the house. Next morning when we all got out, both foundations on both houses were completely gone. We went through about the same thing they did. That house shifted all night and stuff banging into it. But our house wasn't in bad shape as theirs because as far as structure, because they were in an older house. But well, I know about what Buddy's talking about when he says that you can feel it shift, because we found a little pistol and we fired some shots. So, because we didn't know whether they knew we were there or not. We
found all those candles in the window. We found all those candles. You know, and every little bit we'd go down and check the stairs and see how much water had come
out. We got within one and a half feet of the top story of the house. It's a 2-story house. If it come up anymore, we was going to have to go to the attic of that house.
Well, that's the only way that we had to measure the water when we was at, and Jim can verify it. After the one room where we had all huddled up, there was a bed there, and we sat on the bed. But after the part of it underneath us was gone, you know, we heard it just happened so fast. We heard the glass break and the house shifted, and I remember Danny Booth saying, "The house is gone." He yelled, "The house is gone. Get to the other room." And when we all went to the other room, and we sat there, and nothing happened. But you could just feel the house moving, and you could hear the glass breaking. And then we was afraid to go into the other room because we didn't know what was underneath us. And we did go back into that room, but we only go like 1-2 people at a time. And then when we couldn't see how high the water was getting, that's when we started measuring the steps. And I know the water was on the 13th step, and when it finally started going down. Now at about 2 o'clock, 1:30, 2 o'clock, the water started going down, and we got relieved, and then it started coming up again. You know, and here we're right back where we started. And I think finally about 3:30, 3:45, the water started to recede. But, you know, about every 10, 15 minutes, we was out there checking the steps, you know, see where the water was.
How do you explain the water coming up so fast like it did right then?
Both rivers, I guess it's the banks washed out and both rivers hit about the same time. Or either that, or one river was bad and the other one broke through at the time. I don't know why it did.
What do you mean broke through?
Or just because I guess everything that was holding it back washed out. And the banks and stuff. I don't know.
But it did come up fast, though. It seemed like every 5 minutes it was up another foot.
Dry Fork come up first. It was really had the power behind it at first was Dry Fork. And I'd say it was up first. And when the water went down at one time, we noticed it going down the step because it went down at least a step or a step and a half somewhere in that neighborhood during the night. And then it started raising again. And the only thing I've heard different stories that said Black Fork started to raise. It started coming up more then. And that brought the water back up to a higher level yet. Because where we was at, there was nothing in front of us. There was a little building that the man had out in front of his house, but it washed away sometime during the night that we couldn't, you know, we couldn't see. But other than that, we didn't have any protection at all, only a few trees that stood up above us. And one was a pretty good tree, and I reckon it helped divert some of the stuff away from us in order to keep some of it from, because we just figured some of them big trees or anything would be washing into the houses at any time.
It was just like continuous, every second you're thinking, what's hitting the house? The house is moving again. And just all night long you're thinking this stuff, all night long. And we could actually hear the limbs scraping on the side of the house as it went by, you know.
But you could hear the same thing?
Yeah, you could just, every second you heard something different. you look out the window and you know, you're on the second floor and you see the water just floating right beside you. And you'd see like a tree go by first and the house and you just see everything go by.
Camper tops.
Just did you guys have the same feeling that you were gonna die?
Yeah, well, you know, we scared and all, you know, we said we prayed and everything. You know, we asked the Lord to forgive our sins and all. And then finally it just got to the point where we said, if we go, we go, you know. If this just stays here, it stays. There's nothing we can do now.
I didn't sleep at all that night. Brian, I watched him. He slept for about, I'd say, between 15 and 20 minutes all night. I didn't sleep at all. I was just
laying. You wake up, you feel like you slept the whole night.
I was laying there, and I was watching over there. Daylight came, and about that time, I heard them guys yelling. Me and Brian had all of our bunker gear off and stuff because it was so cold. We had blankets wrapped around us, and I heard them yelling, so I went to the window, and they said they were going to try to come over and get us, they thought, because the water was going down. It was supposed to got between 18 and 20 feet deep in the road between the two houses, the house we were in and the house they were in. Washed all that out, just like a canal. There's no way, if somebody would have tried to come over on that road we got across that night, I don't believe they would have made it.
I know, just like I said, Danny Hebb, I honestly feel if it hadn't been for Danny Hebb, I'd have been stupid that night. I'd have tried it. Because I had made up my mind at one point when the backside of the house had went. And I don't know if I told Jim or not, but I said, Jim, I said, we've got to get out of here. You know, I said, we've got to get out of here. That's how bad that I was wanting out of there. And, you know, I was to the point where I was ready to start across. But they said, well, no, you know. He said, you're going to go out there and die quicker than you might hear. You know, but like I said, we all finally accepted the fact that we was going to die. We just had to wait for it to happen. And I'm a firm believer that the only thing that held them homes there that night with us 10 people.